Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Online, on your mobile, and on FM.
From the home of time.
This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
Charles and Lyle.
Good evening to you, very good evening to you, and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. This is the Big Match Preview. My name is Louis Mendes. Joining me in the studio here at the Valley is Nathan Muller. How are you doing, Nath?
Living the dream, mate.
You always live the dream, don't you? Have you ever lived anything other but the dream?
I've had this man for about 3 weeks, mate. I can't fight it, so I'm still trying to power through. But
trying to fight your way through back to the dream, perhaps.
Yeah. Mate, men do suffer from it more, I tell you.
That's
a little debate that could be going.
Yeah, that's a debate for probably a more medically leaning podcast than Charlton Live. Although with our injury problems, sometimes it can be mistaken for a medically leaning podcast here on Charlton Live. Right, obviously we've got a packed show for you tonight on the slowest news week in Charlton history, I think, in the last 3 years probably. But we have got a few things to talk about. We're going to talk about the Walk for the Upbeats, which is coming up soon, because a couple of Charlton Live team members have signed up for that. We're going to hear from Card. Alan Davis of Card spoke to me about 45 minutes ago, talking about the unity protest that's going to be going on in Belgium next month between Card and the Women Against the Regime, and of course the Belgian 20. Talk about something Tony Watt said, talk about something weird that Terry said on Sunday's show that we only sort of just noticed in the edit after. We're going to hear from Jake Forster-Karski and Nathan Byrne as they went to a local school this week. If we get time, we might even mention the fact that the FA have just had a vote of no confidence from MPs, although that's the pot calling the kettle black in one way. And of course, we're going to hear from Carl Robinson as we look ahead to Saturday's London Derby with AFC Wimbledon. We'll get a few other things in as well. We've got an email in, a couple of emails in into the inbox that we're going to mention. If you want to have your say on tonight's show, you can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. Get your views in. If there's anything you want to talk about, well, let us know. And Marion's already done that. She says she's listening to Charlton Live. I hope you enjoy the show, Marion. It's good to have you here. I'm glad you remembered, because she doesn't always remember on a Thursday. But she has. Right, so first things first, Nathan, you've signed up. Terry signed up, even with his back.
Mate, it's going to be the walking wounded. I need a new knee anyway, walking up blimmin' escalators, let alone, what is it, 9 miles or so?
From the training ground to the valley. This is, of course, the Walk for the Upbeats. Always an absolute standout day on the calendar of Charlton season. This is the Walk for the Upbeats. It's going to happen on Saturday, April the 8th, which is, I think, before the South End game. So, of course, you can sign up to support the Charlton Upbeats, which is run by the Charlton Athletic Community Trust. It's a football team for, of course, fans with special needs, and the guys and girls from the Upbeats will take part in the walk, and you've signed up for it, Nathan. I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful occasion, as it always is every year.
Yeah, me and Tel are doing it, and I think we start at 9 a.m. from the training ground, Sparrows Lane, and I think we go through the likes, you know, Eltham, Woolwich and Greenwich. I think I could be wrong, but 9 miles, it doesn't sound that much, but then when you actually think about it, considering that I can't remember last time I walked 9 miles accumulatively, let alone
some sort of pub crawl, I imagine.
I suppose. I've never done one of them. I don't even talk about it. it'll be good. It's a good day, and obviously I think Killer's going to be there, and Flanagan, and there'll be a few more.
That's the standout for me, because I saw that the release the other day that both Derek Killer Hales and Mike, was it Flash Flanagan, did they call this before my time, but the fact they're walking together now, this set a few alarm bells ringing for me, because they're the two that had the fight that had a punch up against Maidstone in the FA Cup in like the late 70s early 80s, around that sort of time, I think, and got sent off for fighting with each other. So are you going to be there sort of holding them back from each other?
I don't know if that's what my main role will be. Hopefully not, but yeah, no, I think obviously they've buried the hatchet years ago, but yeah, no, I think I was texting Terry yesterday, I'm really looking forward to it actually, because I think they're playing as well at the end. I think they're playing Brighton, are they, or something?
I don't know. I mean, I remember last year it was before the Derby game, and I watched them play Derby, and then they dealt with them like about 10-9-1, something like that. It was an absolute slaughtering. It was a really good performance from the Cheltenham Upbeats, as you'd expect, really, because they're actually pretty good. they're really good at what they do. So Derek Hales is going. He's now, you know, obviously the part of going on this walk is to be part of the Cheltenham community, part of celebrating the Cheltenham Upbeats and helping to raise money for them as well. Mm. But you know, I've never met Derek Killer Hales, and he was way before my time playing wise. But he's an absolute legend, and the same for Mike Flanagan. Like it says here, Derek Hales scored 168 goals. He's Cheltenham's all time record goal scorer. Mike Flanagan himself got 120 goals for the Addicts. So you know, these are two absolute legends you get a chance to meet and to, I dare say, hear some stories. And I'm definitely going to make sure that Terry taps him up with a microphone on the way round, so we can have some good stuff for Cheltenham Live that weekend. But you know, the chance to meet those two will be pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think for the younger lot, I consider myself one of the younger lot, Lou. You know,
you
what
just,
I mean?
Just past your 30th birthday, Nathan. I think I can disqualify you from that on that age group.
But I mean, if we try and make it in a relationship, I don't know really. But I mean, as when we were sort of growing up, we were sort of had the Mendonca era, didn't we? And we had Darren Bent. So it's probably maybe not as, you know, I think those two were a bit more prolific than obviously Benty and Mendonca. But it's the same sort of idol, I suppose, somebody, you know, bangs in goals week in, week out. So it's going to be nice to see him, meet him. Of course it is, because I've never met him either. So, and I think there might be other. I don't know if Lee Burnaby there again, because he done it last year, didn't he?
Yeah, Paul Mortimer done it last year. I mean, it says there's going to be a host of other Cheltenham legends, as yet unknown, but I'm sure as soon as you get on the walk, you'll see him.
Well, Terry Smith's one of those.
I mean, he's certainly in the age bracket for a legend.
Digging a hole here, Lou.
As a thank you for the incredible support given to the Upbeats over the last few years, now registration is going to be free. I think the last couple of years you've had to pay, but this year it's going to be free. So all you'd have to do is sign up. You get to the training ground at 9 a.m. You get breakfast, that sort of thing, a t-shirt, and then you trek through Eltham, go through Eltham, Shooters Hill, Greenwich, and then through Cheltenham to the Valley, and then it's 9 miles. And walkers will receive a complimentary hot meal in Crossbars. Well, that's not too bad. Mm.
So I mean, yeah, if there's anyone else who signs up, let us know. It'd be nice to. Especially people who obviously contribute to a show, and that nice to put faces to names, or whatever it is, faces to names, names to faces.
Names to faces, yeah.
But yeah, so it'll be good. So yeah, really looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to the day after. I don't think Terry is either, but I've just ordered a new knee from abroad, just in case.
Yeah, it was £37,000 they raised last year.
I'll tweet out the link in just. I'll tweet out now, actually, just the link of the fundraising page.
Because I mean, that's an incredible. I mean, if you want to sign up to it, you can go to CACT, which is the Cheltenham Athletic Community Trust, cact.org.uk. Or if you go via that website and you don't want to sign up to the walk, but you want to donate, you can go to their Just Giving page. And like Nathan said there, he's gonna sign up. He's gonna tweet out the link as well. So if you want to donate to the Cheltenham Upbeats, make sure you do so. Right, okay, so that's the Cheltenham Upbeat, certainly something to look forward to, if you want to sign up for that March. Right, something else that you can sign up for next month, the 4th of March, the Unity protest, which is going on out in Belgium, the same day the Addicts are playing up at Northampton. CARD, the Coalition Against Roland du Châtelet, the Belgium 20, and WAR, the Women Against the Regime, have signed up for their own thing. They're doing a Unity march out in Belgium, a protest march out in Belgium. CARD and the guys have organised transport out there. There's all sorts of different things going on. They're going to take their protest out to Belgium to protest at St. Trudent. I think there's a game that day as well, so they're all going to march down towards the stadium. Right, so because obviously I don't know anything about it, I wanted to find out a bit more about it. I spoke to Alan Davis from CARD. We've had him on the show before. I just spoke to him about 45 minutes before the show started, just to find out exactly what the day is going to be all about, how you can sign up, that sort of thing. And obviously, in the interest of balance, I have to ask, you know, would you say to the fans who think that, you know, we're on a bit of an unbeaten run now, we've got a new manager, would you say to the fans you think you shouldn't protest? So I've asked him that as well. So let's hear what Alan Davis had to say, looking ahead to next month's Unity March out in Belgium. Right, joining us on the phone here on Cheltenham Live this evening, we've got Alan Davis from CARD. Alan, good evening, good to have you on the show again, long time no speak.
Evening, Louis, yeah, it's been a while, but glad to be back.
Excellent stuff. Right, we're talking today about the... Unity protest march that's being planned over in Belgium on the 4th of March. We had the press release last week from CARD, and we spoke about it then. But I thought it would be interesting to hear from the horse's mouth, perhaps, to find out exactly what your plans are for next month, and exactly why you've decided to try and take as many Cheltenham fans as possible out to Belgium.
Sure. Well, there's quite a few things there to pick through. Let's talk about the reason why, first of all. As has been very apparent since the Sheffield United game that followed swiftly on the heels of the Taxi for Roland thing in Belgium, we've been a bit quiet. We've made the point, I think, when people have inquired that, you know, this is a long campaign, and in a long campaign there's times when you attack and there's sometimes when you just take stock and watch and listen and see what's going on. And that's where we've been, really. But what's very clear is that there is a degree of positivity about Carl Robinson, mixed views, but a degree of positivity about him, a desire to try and get behind the team as much as we can in their pursuit of a playoff place, at least. And we wanted to respect that and also see how the transfer window panned out. But whilst things at the Valley may be quieter, we felt that there was a sufficient groundswell of interest in and support for protests in Belgium. So in conjunction with the Belgian 20 group and also the new Women Against the Regime group, we've put together a joint plan, a joint operation in Belgium called the Unity Protest, which actually takes the fire over to Roland's backyard again.
Of course, you've been out there before. Like I say, you went on the Taxi for Roland trip there. The Belgium 20 have been out on numerous occasions. You obviously feel that this is the way forward now.
Well, I think it's a major feature that it seems to rattle Du Châtelet. It's interesting that when he has come out with his quite combustible statements on occasions, it's generally been in response to some kind of stimulus, and that stimulus has often been action in Belgium. So we know it gets to him, and that's what we want to do. And it's also newsworthy. He is careful about his reputation in Belgium. He guards it jealously, and he doesn't like when the Belgian media start picking over why these people from the UK are coming over and making a fuss. It's a long way to go, and it costs money, and it takes time to organise. There must be something behind it. We certainly had a huge amount of coverage in the Belgian media about the stuff that we did with Taxi for Roland, and also that the Belgian 20 lads did on Roland's birthday. And we think that we can prompt quite a bit more in the Unity protest on the 4th of March.
So what is the plan for what's actually going to happen on that specific day? I think by the looks of it, there's all sorts of plans. I've seen some sort of buffet at some point, and a march, of course.
Yeah, I trust you to focus on the food. no, the situation is, just to pick through some of it for you, it looks like we're going to have, at the present count, at least 160-odd people out there.
Wow.
So some of those, quite a lot of those, are travelling on the subsidised coaches that the protest fund is putting up a large amount of the money for. But there's also quite a lot of independent travellers. We're very early in the process as well of gathering names, so we're expecting that to increase. There's also the possibility of a turnout from the St. Truden fans who are against Du Châtelet as well, to make it a unity in an international sense as well. Yeah. That's to be determined yet, but that's what's looking like a possibility. And what we want to do is get out there in a sort of peaceful but determined way and engage with the local people on a match day near the stadium. So what does that mean? Firstly, we are going to get out there and go to the main square in St. Truden, a place called the Grotemarkt, and we will there be congregating. So all of the people that have gone over on the coaches, all of the independent travellers, any St. Truden fans that are going to be joining us, will congregate there for a rally. We'll make that quite visual. There'll be banners, we'll do placards, we'll have some leaflets that we can hand out to people there to explain what this is all about, as we always do. There will then be a march from the main town square to the stadium that will be good-natured but noisy, and then there will be a protest outside of the stadium, and that will go on until the kick-off of their game. not arranging tickets for people to get into the game. There is an issue with doing that en masse with the security and stewarding in the ground, but we've encouraged individual travellers who are going, if they want to try and get tickets, please do. But we're not coordinating that, and we're not arranging any in-the-ground protest. This is all outside. The buffet that you're referring to is being laid on for up to 100 people in a local sort of bar there. I believe, don't quote me on this, that there is going to be some coverage of Charlton's game at Northampton while that's going on. I couldn't swear to that, but yeah. that's the intent. Then after the protest, we'll have the 2% band, if you remember, their protest song last year, and they did a set at the Card gig in the summer. They're going to be out there with all their kit and doing a gig for all of the travellers that can get into their bar. So altogether, quite a few things to enjoy. Some people then who are going over on the coaches will be bussed back to their hotels if they want a relatively early night, which is in Hasselt, about 12, 13 miles away from St Truden. Otherwise, people can stay in the town, enjoy a drink, enjoy socialising with fellow addicts, enjoy socialising with the St Truden folk as well, that are very friendly, and you know, let it be known that we are good people, good supporters, and there for a good reason.
Yeah, you mentioned the subsidised coaches there. I think it's going to be £25 per head. How would fans who wanted to get involved with that find themselves on those coaches?
Sorry, can you say that again, Lou, please?
The coaches that you've had, fans who perhaps would like to travel in those coaches, how do they get their place on the coaches sorted?
Oh, they can contact us at charlton.card@yahoo.co.uk. It's on Charlton Live publicised. We've also publicised it on Twitter. They can make inquiries there, get information on the itinerary, reserve a place, and they pay their money into the protest fund, and the protest fund pays for the coaches. That's the way it works. The other day, I made a play on Charlton Life for any fans who would dearly love to go but aren't able to for very good reasons, and there's very many people who just can't travel, to sponsor a fellow addict who would love to go and take part in the protest but isn't the kind of financial situation which precludes that. And we've had a great response to that. We've had over £400 as I speak from people wanting to sponsor fellow fans to go out there. So places are available to people who are otherwise unable to afford it. And I've invited those people to contact me via Charlton Life, privately and confidentially, if they want to take part. And I'll do what I can to help them.
In the press release last week, it mentioned that the Card and the Belgium 21 War chose the game the day that coincided with our game at Northampton, as they felt that the tickets were for the Northampton game were going to sell out anyway. Is that sort of your feeling behind it? Is that you don't feel like you're going to be detracting from the support that the lads will get up in Northampton?
No, I think people who want to go to that game and were intending to go to that game would go anyway. Frankly, I don't think there's any problem with that. It's an attractive proposition. It's a new stadium. People want to go and see it and follow the team. That's great, and we wish them all the very best. But there's more than one way of supporting your club, and the protesters in Belgium will be supporting their club in a rather different way by trying to ensure that the pressure is kept on for a change in ownership.
You mentioned sort of earlier that the team are sort of on a slightly better run now. We've won, we haven't lost in six. We've got Carl Robinson, who's been reasonably well received by the fans. But you know, we've seen this before, where we've gone on these mini good runs underneath this regime, and some fans have perhaps wavered from what they feel that their unhappiness with Roland du Châtelet. What do you say to fans who at the moment who are thinking, you know, Carl Robinson's come in, we haven't lost for a while? What do you say to them and the reason why you're still protesting?
I think we have to see how it pans out in the longer run, Louis, quite frankly. It has been a decent run. An average of 2 points a game since Christmas is very good. But we all know that the squad is thin. we've lost some good players during the transfer window in Ademola Lookman and Morgan Fox, cleared out some others, and made one or two decent signings, but I don't think anyone would argue seriously that it's been a stupendous transfer window. It's not been as bad as some might have feared, would be as good as I would say. And that doesn't make our first 11 and the squad into promotion or playoff contenders. So we've done well. We all hope it carries on. But the feeling that I think many of us have in the protest movement is that Du Châtelet is still keeping the purse strings pretty tightly tied. And all the time he does that, we get an injury, we get a suspension, we're going to struggle. And that's the issue. And we've got to get a change of owner so that there is a change of approach to football in the long term, and not just going piecemeal, month to month, doing what we have to do to supplement gaps in the team with loans and so on. It needs a more strategic approach, and a better executed approach. And I think we just got to keep the pressure on for that kind of change. And I think the only thing that will change that is a change of ownership.
Alan, thanks so much for joining us here on Charlton Live. I hope you enjoy your trip out there. We'll here on Charlton Live, we'll try and cover it in some way. I don't think any of us are going to be able to go over, but I'm sure we'll be able to speak to you guys on the phone and find out how it goes out there.
You keep ducking out of things,
Louis.
You're going to get yourself alone one day, mate.
Yeah, thanks for speaking to us, Alan, and I'll speak to you soon.
Has it over halfway, going on a run. Holmes still on the ball, heading towards the corner of the penalty area. Gets the ball in the box. Novak with a header.
It's a goal!
Oh, what a goal! Lee Novak with a superb glancing header from a magnificent Holmes cross puts Charlton in the lead.
Home of time. This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
They got that deep, they all needed snorkels.
Charlton Live.
So I'm back, Charlton Live, here on Maritime Radio. This is the big match preview. We're looking ahead to Saturday's game over at AFC Wimbledon later on in the show. We just heard there from Alan Davis from Card, speaking about the unity protest that's going to go ahead on the day of the Northampton game. It's going to be very interesting, really, to see how Roland reacts to what would be the biggest amount of Charlton fans has gone over in one sitting, really, to Belgium, and how he deals with that. Because every other time that Charlton fans have gone over there, he seems to take it to heart somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said before, they've been... I wouldn't say a pocket full of fans, but, you know, there weren't many, but there were enough to get the message across. And like you said, this time there's going to be quite a significant amount more. So, like you say, don't know if he's going to react the same way as he has been, or if he's going to try. He's learnt his lesson, so to speak, and he just won't say anything. But, you know, obviously I'll be at Northampton away anyway with obviously you and Tom. But
yeah,
it'd be interesting. Like you say, it'd be interesting to see how it pans out and how everything that Alan just explained, how it all unfolds. Yeah. This day,
you could say it would be a difficult decision, really, for fans who would feel conflicted about whether they want to go out to Belgium, because obviously, you know, if you're that way inclined, fans want to get involved with it. But it is so hard, and we have seen some fans have managed to boycott and stay away from games, and we see that with the low attendances. Some people are boycotting, some people just aren't coming. Not an active boycott, but to miss games to go out and protest is quite a big sacrifice to make, and the fact that by the sound of it, already 160 people signed up already, and this is still just under a month before it sounds like a lot of people are going to make that difficult decision and make the decision to go out there to Belgium.
Yeah, and I think what Alan said was a good point. Is a lot of people who, you know, who want to go to the Northampton will end up going to Northampton, which I think a lot, you know, I am, and obviously you are, or what, but obviously you have to anyway, maybe for work, but a lot of fans probably would just go anyway and just go, oh well, it's just unfortunate that I'm going to the game and I can't go to Belgium. But I wouldn't be surprised if the majority of the people going to Belgium, I could be completely wrong, it are the people that have boycotted quite a lot of the valley altogether.
Yeah, well, yeah, it could be either, really. We don't know. But
that's what I mean. So it'd be interesting to see. But like Alan said, you know, it's another way of supporting the club. It's not that they've turned their back on Charlton or anything. They're just doing it in another way. So, yeah. But yeah, it'd be interesting. When is it? 4th of March?
4th of March out there, yeah, and in St. Trude. And obviously the protest itself, I'm sure, will be big and meaningful to the fans to go over there. But I imagine it'll be a great laugh as well.
You yeah, just go, all that Belgian beer down there. Yeah, I know I always bad alcohol, yeah. But, you know. Chocolate.
Yeah, in a way, that does sound like a lot of fun. I kind of wish I was available to go out and cover it, but unfortunately, I'm not. Right, there's not been really one big standout bit of news this week, is there? We've just got loads of little things that we're going to talk about, and one of them that's on the list, which was when I put out yesterday, saying, is there anything that anyone wants us to cover? And the first tweet I got back, I think, was from Lewis saying, Tony Watt's bald now.
He's done a Britney, hasn't he?
not quite to that extent, but. Basically, he's shaved off the majority of his hair in some photos where he was. He's gone back up to Scotland for some reason to advertise the Scottish Cup. Now, I don't know, maybe if this was done a while ago and maybe he'd had his hair cut while he was up at Hearts and now it's grown back or something. But because it was interesting because he was talking about Scottish football and we got some tweets which we're going to come to in a little moment's time. But Tony Watt said, made out that he doesn't really want to return to Scottish football after playing for Celtic and Hearts. He's preferring a career in England or abroad. He said, he talks about what he told us after the meal, going about how he came back for himself, how he was struggling to deal with an injury and he needed to go back and be home. But he said, I don't want to be back in Scottish football, to be honest with you. I enjoyed it at Hearts, but I don't see myself in Scottish football in the next 5 or 10 years. Mm. Celtic's obviously the club I support and I've grown up and played with them. Hearts is a big club and I enjoyed my time there. It's just not for me. It's the style to play everything. Financially, England is better. It wouldn't be worth your while coming back to Scotland when you could be playing in England. I'm not saying that in a bad way or with a strong feeling. Hearts were brilliant with me. They gave me the platform to get my career back after an injury. I just feel that English football is more suited to me or foreign football away from the UK. I don't mean to speak badly of Scottish football. There's some great players here who could play in the English Championship or the Premier League. It's just that I'd prefer to stay in England for a while. Now, I don't see anything wrong with that whatsoever.
No, I mean, if we're all honest, you know, no disrespect intended, like Tone said, in terms of the teams and the players up there, because, you know, they're better footballers than I am, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here. Meh. But if you look at it, you know, even the Premiership, you've got Celtic of what? How many points clear and unbeaten?
27 points or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, I mean, the competitive edge goes out of the Scottish League and due to, you know, they've got to do whatever they can to try and get that back up. But I agree with him. I mean, if you're a footballer and you've got a choice between Hearts, who are a Premiership team, and you know, Charlton, who are League One, to say that, you know, like it's a better game of football here than it is in the Scottish Premier League when you're playing Rangers and Celtic, it's obviously saying something in terms of the standard of football, which we all know anyway, but it was interesting when he said about the foreign bit, though, because I can't imagine him turning up in Spain or whatever, do you know what I mean?
So, well, he played that in Belgium, didn't
Belgium,
he?
But, yeah. But France, yeah. That's what I mean. China,
Maybe
that's what he wants.
Yeah, the best thing for Tony now, in terms of his career, probably is just his... You know, to try and stay settled at Charlton now and see how long. I think his contract runs out at the end of the season.
I think it does.
So it'd be interesting to see whether he was ever, you know, if he's going to be renewed or whatnot. But you know, the best thing for him for the rest of this season is to, you know, try and continue sort of how he started off. Like I say, he had a good game up at Bolton Wanderers. He had sort of a quiet game at home to Millwall and against Fleetwood, probably quite quiet as well. But a case of getting your football, do the talking now, and hopefully you'll be able to do that for the next 6 months. Right, Alex Rogan's tweeted us just before the show started saying February is going to be make or break for the playoffs. Do you guys think we'll sneak in come May? So I'll lay that one on your door, Nathan. I think we discussed a couple of weeks ago. We need 2 points for the per game for the rest of the season on average. Now, if you're looking at well, we've done that since Christmas, really. But you know, have we got enough to do that all season?
Do you know what? I'm always an optimist in terms of sometimes. Silly, like in a silly way, but I think we all know how many. If you win a couple of games in this league, even though it looks like we're miles away, we're not actually that far. Considering, I know we've got to win and people above us got to lose and that. But if you get a run 4, 5, 6 games, we can do anything. And I think we've played all the harder teams now. So I'm not saying we're playing easier teams and we're going to win them all. Of course, I'm not saying that. But I think we've got more of a chance than a lot of other teams in and around us have.
Mm.
I think we could. But I think, like Carl said, which we'll probably hear later, I think February will, I would say, all the way up until, so Wimbledon, Oldham, Rochdale and Shrewsbury. I think those four games, after those, I think that will give us a better idea.
If we can win three out of four, maybe, and stay above water with that 2 points per game margin. Yeah, if we can win three and draw one out of those four.
Because I think we've got games in hand, don't we, on some of them.
On a couple of teams above, we've got two games.
Pressure on them,
some teams won, some teams none.
But automatic, it's gone. But it looks like there's a lot of people fighting for like one place in playoffs, or maybe a push of a two. Because I think the other, like, third and fourth are, like, miles away from us, aren't they?
Yeah, so...
I haven't looked that far up yet.
I'm still looking down.
I'm comfortable. I ain't even looking down there.
No, I think it's about 11 points above the relegation zone last time I checked. Right, London Innit Geezer says, it's amazing how expectations have lowered to get in a playoff place. Should have been minimum requirement this season, not a goal. Which is fair to say. I mean, at the start of the season, we were told, we heard, I think Russell said, top six budget, and you know when you've got relegated, to turn things around straight away and to turn it into a promotion challenge ain't easy. I mean, as a bigger club, we should be aiming for top six minimum. It looks like now we're aiming for top six maximum. That sort of talks about your expectations. Some fans are, people will forget we are 11th, aren't we? We're not 7th.
I mean, at the beginning of the season, I agree with him. You know, the. Even though it hasn't worked out now, obviously in hindsight, when we had Novak and Ajoze and Ricky Holmes, three of the best, probably best five in League One last year, I was expecting top two. We have to go up. But the way the season's gone, because of all those games we drew earlier in the year, remember, we've not been that bad. We've just drawn so many games when Russell was here. Oh, congratulations to him, by the way, getting in Wembley.
Yeah, getting to Wembley, yeah.
Yeah, but I think those draws...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Screwed us a little bit, and but I think with the cards we've been dealt now, it is a bit disappointing that we're sort of aiming for top six when we've had this budget, but they're the cards we've been dealt now. We've just got to deal with it. But no, I agree with him. It is quite sad that we're all expecting top two, and then, like you say, we're languishing 11th, just sort of trying to cling onto a promotion place in February. I really think we can do it, but then if we lose on Saturday, then it'll be like nah.
Yeah. Another tweet from London Innit Geezer says, Killer was the meanest mofo to ever lace boots for Charlton. One look and opposing players filled their pants. The all-time legend. That's Derek Hales, who's going to be, as we know, on the Upbeats March before the game against Southend. If you want to meet Killer and of course Mike Flanagan and a few other Charlton legends, make sure you sign up for that Upbeats March. Head over to cact.org.uk to sign up to that march. Right, some other stuff that the club done in the community today. Got some audio sent over from the club because Jake Forster-Caskey and Nathan Byrne went over to one of the local schools. Discovery Primary School in Tensmere. This was on Tuesday, actually. They said they answered questions from pupils about their use of social media and how they deal with any positive and negative tweets that they receive. Jake Forster-Caskey actually came off Twitter as a result of some of the abuse he used to get while he was at Brighton. So we got some audio to find out. George Jones went over with them. He starts off interviewing Jake Forster-Caskey about how the day went. Then it ends up with Jake Forster-Caskey asking Nathan Byrne how he felt the day went. And it gets a bit more sarcastic then. But it's interesting. This is Jake Forster-Caskey and Nathan Byrne having been to the Discovery Primary School on Tuesday.
Jake, down at a local school today, I mean, it really shows the community side of the club, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as players, obviously, it's great to give back and... you know, to come in here and teach these guys the importance of safety on the internet and things like that is great.
football clubs play such a big part in the local community, don't they? And this just sort of shows that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been here that long, and already I've noticed how much Charlton do for the local community. So, you know, like I said before, it's brilliant to give back, and hopefully, you know, we've taught the kids one or two things. So how important do you think today has been for the kids?
I think it's brilliant, you know, to give back to the local schools around Charlton, and hopefully they learn something from it.
What was the best question and, you know, your best answer to that?
I think the girl that asked, do you get positive interactions on social media? Obviously, sometimes when you're playing well, then obviously you do, but when the team's not doing great or you're not playing great, then you obviously know that you're going to get some negative stuff.
Yeah, it's easier when you get the ball put on the plate for you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, people serve me and I finish my dinner, and that's how it works.
Cheers, Nathan. Thank you.
Into the box, it's a flick on from beginning. Yeah! Yeah! Oh, Charlton have grabbed the equaliser. I think it could have been Bauer on the line, but McGuinness's initial header. And quite how we've done it, I've no idea, but Charlton are back on level terms.
From the home of time, this is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
That's very weird.
Charlton Live.
So we heard Jake Forster-Caskey and Nathan Byrne speaking after they went and spoke to the Discovery primary school pupils in Thamesmead about cyberbullying. Since then, on cyberbullying, I was looking at Nathan Byrne's Twitter earlier. He's been cyberbullying Lewis Page since then. Taking the mickey out of his baggy raincoat, hasn't he?
Yeah, I tweeted him back. Says he's got the gaffer's jacket on him.
Yeah.
Size of it.
Yes, yeah. But that's yeah, good stuff that the club have done out there in the community. Right, another bit of cyberbullying that's been going on this week is brought about, and it's entirely his own fault. Terry Smith, our very own Terry Smith. Right, we all know and love Terry here on Charlton Live. He's a club commentator, well respected in the game of football, well respected around the club, of course. Starting to lose it a bit. Unfortunately, now we were. I sort of did half notice this at the time, but then the conversation went on, so I didn't get a chance to pick it out. But then Tom noticed it when he was listening back to the show, Sunday show, and pointed it out again. So I thought, right, let's make something of this. Now listen very closely to this. Is Sunday show? We're talking about when a skipper Johnny Jackson came on at left back. This is how Terry refers to Johnny Jackson these days.
Bring on Teixeira. Novak coming on was obvious. Janet Jackson coming on didn't surprise me. Putting him left back did. Janet Jackson coming on didn't surprise me. Janet Jackson coming on. Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson.
Smiling back at me.
Charlton Live.
Yeah, what's all that about? Janet Jackson now playing left back for the Addicts. I mean, even Richard Cawley hadn't seen that transfer coming.
I'm just imagining Janet just running down a wing, mate. The pace. Yeah. Whipping a ball in.
Yeah, or actually did the Super Bowl whipping and something else out.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, that was...
It was hilarious when I saw it. Oh.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Right, earlier on today, now this is a story that's sort of only just broken before we come onto the show, really, but I thought we'd try and discuss it as it is, because it doesn't affect Charlton directly, but it affects football as a whole. Now, MPs have decided to pass a motion of no confidence in the Football Association. And so it's largely symbolic, but the MPs have warned that legislation will be brought in if changes are not made. And Sports Minister Tracy Crouch has said that the FA could lose up to £30 or £40 million of public funding if it does not modernise. Now, I mean, obviously, you know, when fans look at teams that are in trouble in terms of, you know, is it the jurisdiction of the Football League, or is it the jurisdiction of the FA? Then you look at things like the England football team that aren't doing very well. They're in absolute shambles, if we're being honest. If you look at the lack of diversity in the upper echelons of the English football game, grassroots funding, all these sort of things that are brought up, and it's quite an interesting, it's quite a big step, really, that the Parliament have decided to pass this motion of no confidence. And I guess it's a real shake-up and a real word to the FA that they need to get their house in order.
Yeah, it's a big shake-up, obviously, from the government, obviously, to, like I said, so the FA would try and reform and try and get the... I've been saying it for ages. I don't think we should have the business... I think you should have an element of business people within there, but I think you should have a lot more ex-players that are involved, more ambassadorial sort of roles in the FA than there currently is. Because, I mean, if we're all honest about it, the people that have played the game and the people that know the game are going to be the beneficiaries of making this sport, you know, and the longevity of it amazing. I don't think if someone's been a CEO as clever and as successful he might be for a retail firm or whatever. I mean, there was one point there was that guy who came from the Royal Mail or something, wasn't it? Adam Crozier or something like that, or some random. I mean, what does he? Yeah, business wise, he knows, but he doesn't know football. He might like a football team, so I think it's a good thing. But you know, they're going to withhold 40 million. Is that really going to dent them that much with the other bit of money that's coming into the game? I don't really know the finances of it in detail, but is it going to be a mass? That's the, I think the key for me is if they turn around tomorrow or next year and say, right, you're not getting your 40 million. Are the FA going to be in disarray, and will that feed down to us, a lot of the grassroots and stuff? Would it make it worse for us? So I think it needs someone to look into it in detail and say, if they did pull that funding, what would that mean for every single club? And then I think they'd probably get a bit more weight behind it.
So
I mean, it's good that they've said it, but I mean, that is the FA. So then, I mean, it depends if they're going to do they do it for the Football League and all that, or the Premier League, or
what,
their own.
Try and see, because there's some interesting quotes here from the Football Supporters Federation chairman Malcolm Clark on the BBC Sport website. Said, "We're very pleased to see so many MPs back our proposals for a minimum 5 fan representatives on the FA Council, representation on the FA Board, and increased diversity." Now, of course, fan representation is something particularly probably close to Charlton fans' hearts at the moment, because a lot of fans feel like they're not getting their message across at certain levels of the game, whether it be within the club, outside the club. Malcolm Clark went on to say, "Supporters are integral to the health of our national sport, yet are still shockingly underrepresented in the FA hierarchy. The FA Council has only one supporter representative." Yet the armed forces and Oxbridge have 5. It's also important to acknowledge that the FA Council have stood up to rampant commercialism within the game and protected fans' interests, such as when the FA Council stopped the whole Tigers name change. I mean, some of the MPs said things like, Tracy Crouch said, "The FA's current model does not, in my opinion, and clearly that of other colleagues, stand up to scrutiny. Reform is therefore required." Judith Cummins said, Labour MP for Bradford South said, "At best they're dragging their feet, at worst they're willfully failing to act." I mean, these sort of things, it shows that these things are being sort of held to account. Now, as I said, it's sort of a pot kettle black situation with MPs saying off the FA, they could probably do it backwards to them as well. But, you know, I do like the idea of more fans being involved with the way that our sport is run.
Yeah, no, you're always going to need people to be held to account. Otherwise, you're going to have people at the FA have a free reign. And if they had that anyway, God knows where we'd be. But, I think it's good. And I think, it's a bit... maybe could be a bit rich as the MPs doing it, but someone's got to say it, and they're the ones who can crack the whip at the moment. So, well, I'm all for it. I don't think it's a case of just doing it for the sake of it. I think they're only doing it to try and bring things, make football better in terms of the experience, and, you know, more in the community, so we're all sort of involved in it, because I think we're slowly but surely leading down a path of it all being big business and being unaffordable for a lot of people.
I mean, we went to the West Ham game the other day, and that was a bit of an eye-opener for me, just how commercialised, especially the top end of football is these days. It just felt so different to a Charlton game. And you know, with a lot of clubs, you know, changing stadiums, and you think more and more stadiums are going to be like this. There's going to be so expensive to go, that sort of thing. It's quite an eye opener, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, even though West Ham, lovely stadium. You know, we saw some fantastic players, David Silva, and then it was a great day, great night rather.
We did plenty of burgers.
Yeah,
you did eat burgers. Yeah.
But the difference is even though there must have been about, what, how many people drew it? 30,000 or 40,000 maybe?
Well, the stadium, there must be, I don't know, probably nearer 50,000,
right? And I can honestly say the game against, where was it really low, like Shrewsbury at home or something like that, it felt more of a football match and a football atmosphere at that Charlton game, even though there was probably, really, what, 6,000 fans, than it did at that West Ham game, because you could just feel, it felt like, like we said at half time, he was having a war. It just didn't feel like a football match. It just felt like a commercial sort of tourist attraction. It didn't feel like a football game, and I think that's what slowly but surely is going to happen with every single club, which I don't want it to be. It's going to be like a franchise, like an American sort of NFL thing, and that's what I don't want to happen. And if that means the FA have got to come in and go, listen, mate, on you, out the door, in comes you, and then a bit of fresh idea. It might just need a bit of fresh impetus, you know?
Yeah. We'll see. Well, we'll see how what comes out of the confidence really in the FA. Right, we've got an email in from Dan Walter. Emailed us earlier. Said, "Hi, Louis and team. I'm a Charlton fan living in Northampton. My son, who is 7, defying all odds, has also become a very keen supporter, even in the sad state of the club at the moment. He even convinced his uncle, a cobbler season ticket holder, to come into the family zone before the game at the Valley fixture at the start of the season. We try to come to as many games as possible, both at the Valley and away, and obviously the cobbler's fixture has been one that he and I have been looking forward to all season. Checking the news today that the tickets are on restricted sale to season ticket holders only, and we'll have to wait at least another week for tickets is such a shame, and I will hate it if we end up having to sit in the home end to see the game." He said, "The podcast is great and keep up the good work." Well, hopefully, thanks for that, Dan. Hopefully you'll be able to get, I think they say there's a general sale view sort of next week. I reckon a few hundred will probably go to general, hopefully, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know it's going to Valley Gold first, but I don't know how many tickets you get for Valley Gold, is it?
Yeah, it's normally two, I think, something. So hopefully, yeah. Dan, that you'll be able to. I'm sure that'll be a special game for you and your family, what being local up to Northampton and such. Right, time to look ahead now. Saturday's game over at AFC Wimbledon. Tickets even harder to come by for this game over Kings Meadow, yeah.
I think these went quicker than the Millwall game, I think. I swear they did. I didn't even realise. I remember they went on sale, and then you and Tom were like, "What's that going on? They're gone." It's like, you're off.
So, they've sold out. I think there's still tickets going for the beanbag at the Valley, last I heard. So if you still want to be able to watch the game, but you haven't, I think they're about £8 to come to the beanbag and watch it here at Crossbars. But either way, it's time to look ahead to that game. Carl Robinson, of course, spoke to Tony Hart from BBC Radio Kent. He was talking to Charlton manager Carl Robinson ahead of this Saturday's game at AFC Wimbledon.
Talking to Charlton manager Carl Robinson ahead of Saturday's derby away to AFC Wimbledon. Carl, Saturday's match sees Charlton kick off a stamina-sapping five-week spell of Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday matches. Charlton are unbeaten in six, but do you have the strength in depth to cope with that kind of heavy schedule?
Strength in mind, yes. Speaking to my dad coming in this morning, and he said, I was saying, "Oh, Dad, I've got loads of games." He told me to shut up. He said, "Come and do a day's work with him." So it is what it is. We're all in the same boat. Listen, there's going to be times, and I'll have to say to you all that we're fatigued and we're tired, but if I do that, it's because we will be. But I don't want to use that as an excuse. We have a wonderful team here, we have a real good group of players, and we're really excited about the challenge. Players say that they don't like training anyway, so that's not a moment. We have a lot of games. It's something to embrace, and what it does do, it separates the boys from the men, and it can turn your season around. There's no time like this in any football league season, because maybe like Christmas and period where you have a lot of games in a short period of time, you can be completely out of it and then completely in it, or completely in it and then completely out of it. And it's how we approach these next few games. It'll be very key and vital for our campaign this season.
Charlton are 6 points outside the playoff zone with a game in hand. What's it going to take to break into those playoff places?
The right mentality, the right dedication, application and desire, and a group of players that want to be here and want to wear our shirt. Because if they don't, they can go. It's quite simplistic, really. We're looking forward to playing a number of games, but the players have to take responsibility for these games as well. They've got to embrace them. And we're a big club, so our sports science will be tested, our medical team will be tested, we'll be tested as a group of staff, And the big one is obviously being up in Manchester on Tuesday and the following Saturday. It's the travelling more than the games and the recovery. But come on, it's now or never, really, isn't it? And that's what it's going to be, the same intensity, the same desire, every single game that we play from now to the end of the season.
Suspensions are not helping Charlton's cause at this critical time, and you're going to be without Nathan Byrne and Lewis Page on Saturday.
Yeah, some of the decisions by the referee haven't been great. A few players should have been sent off against me. I seen a tackle on Saturday, it was worse than Nathan Byrne's. Didn't even get a booking. I don't get some of them, but some of the decisions have been against my players. If people don't want us to go up because we're big and we're a big draw in League One, some people might want to keep us here. We have to be stronger than that. And the one beauty about being at a big club is that if one player misses out, another talented player steps in. And that's got to be the case. Okay, listen, the more I watch Nathan Byrne's back, he's turned his back to protect himself, and the lad sort of pulled out of the challenge, really. It makes it look worse than what it was. But it was borderline. I don't think I can argue too much with it. But I think there's been a few challenges on my players which have been horrendous. And they don't seem to get punished. It's almost like people have got a point to prove when they come to the Valley that they're not going to bow down to our crowd. And maybe some referees need to be stronger when they come to the Valley and give us what we deserve. But going into the next few games, we've got to be looking after ourselves and the fans. And we're the only thing that matters. It's the fans who wear the shirt and the players that... Fans who wear it and travel to support us, and the players who wear it and the players that died when they play on that football pitch for us, and nobody else can get involved in anything else, because obviously no one's not going to get any help. So the suspensions are going to step us back a little bit, but it gives somebody else the opportunity to play.
What you're saying is you're not getting a fair crack at the whip from referees.
I don't think we are. I think everyone's seen, the fans have certainly seen over the last few weeks, that there's been a number of opportunities that we could have got free kicks, people booked. Certainly now we've got some of the most talented young players around, the Joel Rebo and Ezri Konsa, are getting some of the worst treatment I've seen, elbow kicked, stamped on, everything. It happened to Addy, he got no protection. The Ricky Holmes of this world, no protection. We all want to see football played in the right way, but sometimes there's only one way of dealing with them, and that's by stopping them in an illegal way in some ways. And we have to make sure that gets protected for the players, otherwise we're going to get a load of injuries, which we have been getting injuries because of some of the challenges. But tackle on Jake with his knee was terrible on Saturday. There's a number of things that have gone on that I'm not too happy with, but and everyone's seen that. The fans see it. The last few referees have walked up the Valley, I think they certainly know how bad they've been. And it's not that you get in trouble, it's part and parcel of the industry getting in trouble by what you say. It's amazing how we can be judged by you as a media, we can be judged by the fans, we can be judged by our players, yet referees can't be judged and spoke about by managers or anybody. There's a self-protection mode. I still believe them referees should come out and answer questions to the media. And why? And because at the end of the day, they want to be a massive entity within the game, a fragment of the game. They need to do the other side of it as well. Because I should then, with you, not have to speak about them. They can talk about their own actions. And that'd be interesting, because I think what we'll all have as a fan, remember this as a fan, we'll have clarity in the decision. And they make a mistake and they go, I got that one wrong, brilliant, that's honesty, transparency, it's moving forward, and he'll learn from that. So it's like if I pick a bad team and I come and say to you, I got it wrong, I got the team wrong, my fault, don't blame the players. Well, I'll learn from that, and I think people respect the honesty and the transparency. So I hope my players get a little bit more protection from now on, and they're going to need it, because I'm telling you now, I'm not going to stop moaning, I'm not going to stop asking questions, because all I care about is my club, nobody else's club. And if they've got a problem with that, tough, because we've got to start looking after ourselves now, and hopefully as the weeks go by the performances will increase and our intensity will. The players have been in great spirits around the building, and we know we're not going to get no help from anybody else. The only help we're going to get, and the only help that we want, is the support that we get week in, week out. I know that we're to sell out at the weekend, and I know it's going to be being back to the Valley, which is great, it's different, and hopefully we can put a performance in for everybody.
I think it's worth pointing out that journalists have long wanted to ask referees about certain decisions, but referees are not allowed to speak afterwards.
Well, why should I have to speak to you then? Why should I have to speak to you? Because I'm contractually binded to speaking to the media. The club will get a fine because the Football League, it's a Football League requirement, it's an FA requirement. But the referees don't have to do it. Because they need to be protected. Come on. They're grown men. If they can't act the pressure, don't do it. If I can't come to you and take the criticism from you as the media, I shouldn't be in this job either. So, for me, it's something that I think is a necessity. I'm not saying it should be a free-for-all. I'm saying it should be four questions that are policed properly and about key match incidents. Not the emotion, just why, when and how. And we'll have more transparency. And we'll soon see who the good ones are. Maybe it's asking a question, maybe it's putting more of a challenge on them. But if I refuse to speak to you, who am I letting down? The fans? The people who allow our game to be the greatest game in the world, in our country. So I think the referees need to take more responsibility, and they should come out and speak to the media. I have to speak live to Facebook. Is it Facebook I'm on? Is that what it is? And I get myself in so much trouble. But they need to take responsibility for some of their decisions. And it'd be great, wouldn't it be great if a fan could tweet in a real good question to our media team, and the media team ask the referee the question, and the fans get the answers immediately. Or that they need 30, 40 minutes to think about why they've done it. Because that's what they need with us at the moment, because we've got decisions that we're certainly not getting. I could be getting fined for this again. My missus is going to kill me.
What, does she pay the fine?
She will be, yeah.
Getting back to Charlton's injury problems, is Josh McGuinness available to you on Saturday?
Yes. He's training for the first time today. And we'll see where he's at. And then hopefully he'll be available. I'm not too sure whether he can start or not yet. He's had no contact, was it 3.5 weeks? So we'll have to wait and see how he responds to full training today and tomorrow.
And is anyone else available to you that wasn't available last weekend?
No. I think Jordan Bataka hasn't got jet lag.
So there you go, there's Carl Robinson talking to Tony Huff on BBC Radio. Kent, a lot of stuff about referees in there. I mentioned the other day how he speaks a lot about referees. And I just had an email, in fact, in from Sam Stalkers. He said, "Hi guys, it's going to be an exciting couple of months at Charlton if we can keep up with the top six. I'm always optimistic and I won't believe we can't do it until the season ends." I mentioned the other week about Robinson talking too much, and in his last few appearances in front of the camera, he keeps mentioning how the officials are against us, and it's starting to move into whining, and it's unnecessarily negative, and it's what I don't like. What I didn't like about him at Milton Keynes. However, if we go up, he can moan as much as he wants, hoping for a win on Saturday, and I reckon it will be great. Show as always. That's from Sam Stalkers. Thanks for that, Sam. Carl Robinson obviously not happy with the refs still talking about that. I mean, do you see that as sort of a tactic? I mean, some people suggest it's like a way to create a them against us mentality at the club that some people might that players within the club might thrive in.
Yeah, I think it is. A lot of managers do it. You see Mourinho do it in a big game. Before big games, he'll say, "We haven't had this, we haven't had that," and it will get in the referee's head. Personally, I think it will probably work against you sometimes, and I just think, you know what? Yeah, you know, people have been getting kicked, and you know, maybe some of our players do need a little bit more protection, but, you know, you're going to get tackles in a game. And you just got, it's part and parcel of it, and I just think if you can't, you know, I just not do it back, but you know what I mean, just get on with it, and then the best way of beating it is going scoring and beat and getting the 3 points. But I do find it quite irritating as well. I must admit.
Seb Lewis has tweeted in saying referees seem untouchable. I mean, that was an interesting suggestion from Carl there, saying
he's got a point though.
Fans should be able to. Well, obviously,
not the fan bit.
I mean, the idea of referees. I think they used to do it back in the day. I remember seeing referees being interviewed, but I'm sure there's a law against it now, a rule against it. But you know, Carl's idea of fans tweeting. I mean, some of the tweets we get into this show, and people generally, you know, aren't too furious with us. The tweets you'd get into a referee, they'd have to invent censorship on Twitter just to get past all the swearing and the death threats you'd get.
But I mean, I think the concept sounds great. I mean, I would do it. I'd do it for everyone apart from Keith Stroud, because we'd be here all night. But the thing is, with every ref, if they could just come out, but then the problem is where do you draw the line? Mm. What's a key decision? Is it a handball, or is it an
red
offside?
Card,
or
is
it
yeah, exactly.
Card?
Yeah.
Is it just yeah? Or is it just they have to come out and explain if they didn't give someone a card? So if someone bit someone and they didn't book them or whatever, why didn't they do it?
That would take some explaining.
Why didn't one? Is it? Yeah. But no, that's what I mean. So it's hard. I was thinking about it now, how you can police it. Yeah,
like, but even then, like the referees have to say there was some sort of incident like that, and they didn't see it. Then it would have to go to the disciplinary panels to work out a punishment. So the referee couldn't come out, watch a video, and go ooh, because it would have to go through the correct procedures. Lewis Wheeler says the ref against Fleetwood was awful. Millwall, we had a fine goal disallowed. Why wouldn't KR moan about the ref? I mean, the other thing is, once it's done, it's done. There's not much more you can do about that after. You can't really keep going on it. I guess is the suggestion, right? Anyway, we need to look ahead to Wimbledon in the next couple of minutes, the last couple of minutes of tonight's Charlton Live. Lewis did just add, they have been shambolic, and then the same routine goes on and on and on with referees being awful every week. Right, Wimbledon, their form, I don't know, last time out lost 4-0 at Sheffield United, their form was a bit shaky now. And in their last five or six games, they've only really had, longer than that, last eight or so games, they've had one win against Oxford United. Other than that, they lost at home to Sutton in the FA Cup, drew with Millwall, lost at Bristol Rovers, lost quite heavily at Southend. Before that, like I say, a 4-0 win against Port Vale, Kings Meadow, back in mid-December. Their form's slightly shaky. I mean, we remember they had a difficult start to life in League One. Then they started to push up the league and got towards sort of the playoff zone when they beat us here at the Valley, remember. Now they've drifted back down to 15th, so they're, I was going to say they're out of contention. They're only 3 points behind us, and if we're still in contention, then you could argue that they'd be in contention if they beat us on Saturday. But for a team that's come from nowhere in non-league, I guess they'd probably be reasonably proud of the first season they've had in League One.
Yeah, no, I mean, like you said, they started pretty well, and they were quite solid from what I remember, and then obviously the recent weeks, and they've started conceding, because they beat Bury twice, didn't they, 5-0 and 5-1.
Yeah, Cup and League, I think.
So they've done that, and ever since then, they've started leaking goals.
And of course, we've got Josh McGuinness back on Saturday, and that could sound a bit...
That
was the question I was going to say, do you think he'll start? Because I remember when Bauer started his first training on a Thursday, I didn't think he'd start, but he did start the next game. Yeah. So the question is now whether he's going to stick with Tony Watt, who away from home had played pretty well at Bolton, or is he going to bring in Josh McGuinness?
Yeah, it's hard because, I mean, obviously, I think if your best players are fit, then you start them. But we've got to remember, we've got a hell of... The next 5 weeks, a hell of a busy schedule. So, personally, I would save Josh for possibly next Saturday against Rochdale.
Hey, cool. But, right, it's time for predictions. We are running out of time. Tom, who couldn't be here this week, has sent in his predictions. Going to be 3-1 to Charlton, over Stad hat-trick, which would be impressive.
Surprise.
If he's probably not going to play. Nathan, your one?
I'm going 2-1 Charlton.
2-1 Charlton, excellent stuff. I fancy us this week as well for some reason.
That's well read.
Yeah,
I think all three of us predict to win.
I think we're going to win by 2-0. Right, this has been Charlton Live, the big match preview. We'll be back on Sunday. I won't be back myself, but Terry will be hosting. Him and Janet Jackson are doing a duo hosting Sunday evening show. Nathan, thanks for joining us here on the big match preview.
No worries. Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, I've been Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live and the big match preview. Let's hope we can get those 3 points over at King's Meadow on Saturday, and Terry will tell you about it on Sunday. See you then. Charlton Live.